That was wonderful.
So we got to, we can do concurrences first?
It's up to you. Yeah, we've got two. Senator Peterson has three of them, but he didn't get his. He's not ready on them. Senator Von Flader is ready.
Senator, please come to order. With that order of business, signing of Senate enrolled acts. Senate enrolled act number one.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 1, being Original Senate File 3, an act relating to Select Water Committee.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 1, being Original Senate File Number 3. I so signed Senate Enrolled Act Number 2.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 2, being Original Senate File 7, an act relating to banks, banking, and finance.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 2, being Original House or Senate File 7. I so sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 3.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 3, being Original Senate File 23, an act relating to the State Board of Equalization.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 3, being Original Senate File 23. I so sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 4.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 4, being Original Senate File 33, an act relating to offenses against computer property.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 4, being Original Senate File Number 33. I so sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 5.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 5, being Original Senate File 30, an act relating to counties.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 5, being Original Senate File Number 30. I so signed. Introduction of House Bills, House Bill 209, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 209, engrossed, disparity in wages and benefits between men and women, sponsored by Representative Connolly, passed the House, ayes 37, noes 23.
House Bill 209, referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 93, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 93, engrossed, Wichy Repayment Program, Veterinary Medicine Students, sponsored by Representative Larson, passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 93, referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, House Bill 236, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 236, engrossed, School Finance Omnibus Education Funding, sponsored by the House Education Committee. Passed the House, ayes 43, noes 16, excused 1.
House Bill 236, referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 106, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 106, Change in Party Affiliation, sponsored by Representative Blackburn. Passed the House, ayes 34, noes 25, excused 1.
House Bill 106, referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. We're at that business. concurrence request. Senator Von Fladen, are you ready for message number 295? Reading clerk, please read in the message.
Message number 295, banking revision, referencing Senate File 5, banking revisions.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr.
It's supposed to be. There we go.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for concurrence on Senate File 5, message number 295, and ask for your favorable consideration. What the House did on this, on page 16, line 16, they struck the word incorporators or members and just reinstituted the word the person. So on your bill, you'll see a struck word person. They just made that plural, reinstated that, so it's the persons forming a trust company, struck the new language, incorporators or members. This passed the banking commissioner's muster, and he approved, and so I'd ask that you guys do too.
Further discussion? Further discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 5, message number 295. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson? Aye. Anselmi Dalton? Aye. Baldwin? Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
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 Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File Number 5, message number 295. Senator Von Fladen, you ready on the next message?
Yes, I am.
Message number 296.
Yes, I am.
Reading clerk, please read it in.
Message number 296, referencing Senate File Number 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for concurrence on Senate File 6, message number 296, and ask for your favorable consideration again. What the House did on this was it went to page 5, line 18, and we had previously, during the interim, struck the term throughout the state, thinking that was a little bit squishy language, and you really didn't know what throughout the state meant. So the original language, as we brought it to them, said the director shall hold public hearings to receive comments on the report. They thought throughout the state was pretty important because they couldn't really define it themselves, but they said put that language back in there. So now it reads the director shall hold public hearings throughout the state to receive comments on the report. I'd ask for your concurrence, and we'll get along with them just fine.
Further discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 6, being message number 296. You vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks? Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? No. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger? Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No.
Ellis,
I don't know. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 22 ayes, 7 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 6, message number 296 to the House Amendments. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, pursuant to Senate rules, I rise to explain my vote on the last bill. The stricken language that's reinstated says throughout the state they did not reinsert the original language to the extent practicable. And my fear was, after reading that, and I'm sorry the debate and the explanation went too fast, but without that clause, I'm afraid you've left it wide open to lawyers for various interest groups to say that you didn't get adequately throughout the state and to significantly delay and injure this process. So, Mr. President, I think we have just made a mistake.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, having voted on the prevailing side, I would ask for immediate reconsideration.
That motion is in order. Do we need, how many seconds do we need, Ellen? We don't need any, do we?
No.
Okay. Senator Office.
He needs to state what motion he was referring to for the reconsideration, which was close to what he did, but if he could clarify that.
Senator Hicks, you want to restate your motion, please?
Yeah, Mr. President, having voting on the prevailing side, I would ask for an immediate reconsideration of message number 296 on concurrence for Senate file number 6, radioactive waste storage facility amendments.
That motion is in order. If you vote aye, you vote reconsider that bill. Chief Clerk, please call the roll. If you vote aye, you vote to reconsider.
For reconsideration, Agar excused. Anderson?
No.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Co?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 aye, 5 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you vote to reconsider message number 296 to Senate File 6. The Chief Clerk will call the roll on message number 296 to Senate File 6. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Please call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen? No. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich? No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Bonfladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 6 aye, 23 no, 1 excused.
Once again, by your vote, you have failed to concur with the House amendments on Senate File 6, message number 296. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you. Today, fellow colleagues, we have a group of wonderful students in our body. You've all received an invitation to tonight's Boys and Girls Club, the Wyoming Alliance. They're selecting their Wyoming Youth of the Year. And so hopefully you'll all be able to join us later this evening at this dinner. But I wanted to recognize some of the outstanding youth that we have here in our chamber. First, we have Michael Martinez Montano, who is the Youth of the Year for the Boys and Girls Club of Cheyenne. Tessa Williams, who is the Boys and Girls Club of, Student of the Year for Carbon County, Sierra White, who is representing Natrona and Bighorn Counties, and then Emilio Diaz, who is representing F.E. Warren Air Force Base Youth Programs. In addition to these students, we also have the Junior Youth of the Year, and those include Lakeisha Thorpe of F.E. Warren, Lexi Archuleta of Rollins, and Des Pooley of Cheyenne. So I just want to thank all of them for listening to us debate a little bit this afternoon and congratulate them on being selected as Outstanding Youth of the Year for their respective Boys and Girls Clubs. Thank you.
Welcome to the Senate. It's great to have you here today. Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. President. While we're at it, may I have the privilege of...
You bet.
Okay, we also have some very special visitors from the Commonwealth of Kentucky. My wife's family is here. If they would stand up, her parents, Frank and Marie, and her brother, Peter, is here. So let's welcome to Wyoming.
Welcome. Senator Boner, you need to give them a coat of the West to take back to our friends in Kentucky.
All right, we can do that, sir.
Conference Committee for Senate File 6, message number 296 will be Senator Von Fladern, Chair, Senator Scott, Senator Coe. Reports from standing committees.
February 13, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 4, to whom was referred House Bill 40, engrossed, Education Accountability, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business consideration, reconsideration of bills on general file.
Reconsideration?
Further consideration.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I didn't want to replow the same ground, Mr. President.
I was just seeing if anyone was paying attention, Senator Perkins, and we are.
We are. Okay, so we passed the first test. The second test will be, Mr. President, that I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole, to consider additional or further consideration of House bills on general file.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Boner, come on up.
This is for you.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order.
First bill for our consideration is House Bill 291. Will the reading clerk read in the House bill?
House Bill 291, Department of Health Facilities, an act relating to the Department of Health Facilities, sponsored by the House Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 291, Department of Health Facilities. There are no standing committee amendments, and with a further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from Star Valley.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This continues our work on the State Hospital, the Life Resource Center. Take you back to 2014 when we created this task force. We took a look at all five state facilities around the state and kind of narrowed down what was to be a priority, and that was eventually became the State Mental Health Hospital and associated with that Lander, and to tie the two campuses together. Well, just as of this past a week ago Friday, the Level 3 design for the construction and renovation of the Wyoming State Hospital and the Wyoming Life Resource Center was completed as we moved through this legislation. So now the task force is required to report to the Labor Committee and the Appropriations Committee has recommended that the State Hospital and Life Resource Center move from the Level 3 design into the construction phase. So with this bill, we're bringing it all forward to the construction and renovation of these two facilities. This bill will also appropriate all of the remaining funds set aside earlier. We put together a program earlier where we had 135.2 set aside from the state facilities construction account for the state construction department to work on this, as well as appropriating remaining funds left over from last year. We had the $9 million appropriated last year from the Level 3 design to the state construction department. Those were the funds we were setting aside, getting ready to move forward once we had everything in place, and it's all falling together now, members of the Senate. This bill directs 4.3 to the state facilities construction account, and what this includes, a Level 2 study estimation for the project was, I take you back to what the estimated study, it looked like we could do this for $149,155,000. We appropriated $145,000 for it as a placeholder pending the Level 3 design estimates and, of course, the final bid for construction. So what we're doing with this bill, we're putting in another 4.3, puts us a little closer to the Level 2, the Level 3 design estimate, gets us up to where we need to be. I would note that $145,000 we had earlier included SIPA funds of $20 million each from fiscal year 17, fiscal year 18. So where we're at now, with this bill, we can move forward. What do we get to do now with this bill? We get to complete the drawings for the construction. We prepare the bid documents and the drawings. We request the qualifications from the contractors. We send out the request for the proposals. We receive bids. We select contractors. We do all of that to members of the Senate through 2017 with the idea and the plan to get everything underway for construction in 2018. We need 2017 to do all of those items I just mentioned, the drawings, the qualification of contractors, request for proposals, select the contractors. All that takes place this coming year. And then in 2018, we finally get to work on what was started clear back with the governor's task force back into 14, and I was looking around for notes to figure out just how many meetings, roughly without the phone conference, we're looking at about 35 different committee meetings that have led us to this point. So ask for your approval of the bill as we get ready to move forward with our health facilities.
Senator Von Flayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to figure out how this interfaced with the capital construction bill that went out of here. 166, and how they, so maybe the sponsor can describe that to me, how these would work, or are we directly appropriating to this account with an interfund loan and then hope that the money flows in the other side, or I really don't understand how this quite fits.
Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, what we launched with was overall capital construction projects. What we did with this particular House side of the measure was step in and say this is specifically how we will do it. It's more definitive language. We're coming in with the 4.3. We needed to add that to make sure we're a little closer to it. Previously, we had some SIPA money set aside, $20 million in fiscal year 17, $20 in fiscal year 18. That was guaranteed by the LISA. That was part of the original $145 that we had as a placeholder last year. What we're doing with this is just more or less finalizing it.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, my question is with regard to the facilities at the Life Resource Center. Is this a final authorization to proceed with construction such that we will not see this project again? It's just going to be built now?
Senator Dockstetter.
If there's no further questions, I'll take that one. This is where we're at right now. I'll just repeat this for the body. What this bill does is allows us now to complete the drawings for construction, prepares the bid documents and the drawings, requests the qualifications from the contractors, sends out the request for the proposals, we receive the bids, and we select the contractors. This is what happens in 2017. In 2018, we plan for construction. So technically, to your question, good Senator, if all this comes together in 2017, which we're hoping to do with this bill, then hopefully you don't have to see it again and we can just get to work.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, very reluctant. I have a major reservation about this decision. I don't see any problems at the mental health hospital. But we have had in recent years quite a number of problems with the Life Resource Center, with complaints from the formal advocacy group that's charged by the feds with looking out for the interests of those with developmental disabilities. We've had complaints regarding the medical treatment from a number of the guardians of the residents there, and we had this past year the Department of Health and Human Services came in, did an examination or audit, I don't know what you call it, and found some major deficiencies and required some immediate remediation. I am concerned that there is a systematic problem with the management of that outfit. We've been concerned for some time. Your Committee 10, the former chairman and I, offered several years ago to the health department director if he needed legislative help, getting some more tools to deal with the problems there, we'd be happy to assist him. We never heard back, and I think the reason was that there really wasn't a legislative fix. It was administrative things. Mr. Chairman, but these keep arising, and I am profoundly reluctant to appropriate money for construction at that facility given the level of the management problems there. This is the sort of thing, Mr. President, that confronts many organizations. You get a tradition within your workforce that is keeping you from delivering the quality that you need or the cost you need. In this case, it's quality issues, and you have to do drastic things. And I am deeply concerned about this. I didn't hope that we wouldn't be going this far this time, but we are, and this looks like our last chance to deal with it. So I would appreciate some discussion, but I will say to the Senate that I am deeply concerned. And reluctant to appropriate for this facility until I know those problems are fixed.
President Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good points by my tall colleague from Natrona County. Members of the Senate, let's walk you through what we've been doing the whole last year on this particular project. And if you recall, we had a lot of debate in the Senate last year about what we should do, and we set it up specifically, so we went through level two, and we would do that we would look at this project in two ways. One, we could do both of them at the same time for a lot of obvious reasons, or we could do one and delay the second one. Of course, what we're doing, if you go back to the original task force, it started, I believe, in 2011, and the report that came back to the legislature then said that what we need to do is we need to have the state hospital be more of an interim facility for the mental health type people. We needed to grow that facility because it was too small. We didn't have enough beds, and we needed to take care of that issue. But in the meantime, what do we do with the people that were in the state hospital? So they needed to transition to the WLRC, and that the WLRC would be more of a long-term intermediate care facility. We also had what we call the legacy population, and those are the people that are at the WLRC presently, and we did not want to disturb or upset that situation. So very carefully, we've set that aside, and my colleague for Fremont County can speak to that as well because he's been instrumental the whole way in dealing with this particular issue. So we set that aside that the legacy population would not be affected. All last summer, we went through and we had meetings almost every other week as we went through level two, and it became more and more apparent to us, that being your special committee, of which there were three members of the House, three members of the Senate, and we had the director of the Department of Health, the YDOT director, and I believe one other individual on that select committee that worked on that task force. The conclusion was that it was appropriate for us to move forward at both of them at the same time. And there's benefits to be gained by the bidding process, there's benefits to be gained by how we set up the level three, and there's also big benefits to be gained in how we situate and we do the mission for the state hospital. We do the WLRC at the same time because there's a disconnect there. If you do one and then you wait. And, of course, the other thing, Mr. Chairman, you know, sometimes projects for other reasons get stopped. And if you just only did the state hospital and move forward and left the WLRC hanging, then what do you do with those people that you were going to move to the WLRC? So your task force made a decision that we thought the recommendation we wanted to bring to you was to move forward. It's a policy decision, Mr. Chairman. We can certainly do one, and we can delay the other one. We're set it up so we could do that, very carefully set up last time. I believe my colleague from Natrona County had those concerns, and we worked together to put in the law. That's the way we would deal with it. You know, as far as the concerns about what's going on at the WLRC, the PNA, whom you're speaking of, is a federal group that comes in and oversees, if you will, the operations of the WLRC. There was a meeting about a week or two ago. I did not attend that. The majority floor leader was there and attended that with PNA about, I think, WLRC and some other issues. I've seen a long list of some of the concerns they had, as far as I'm aware of, and we could provide you with that testimony on that. But all of their questions were answered, and we were on track to be in compliance. So I don't see the problem there that you're seeing in terms of the PNA. Now, they have had turnover, and there are some issues there, no question about it. It's a tough deal. There's a lot of reasons. We're having some nursing issues up there. It's hard to recruit people, so we're not without our issues. But I think for us to go ahead and only do one, I think we take a step backwards. I'd rather see us pull the trigger, do what's right, and do both of them at this time.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have the privilege of serving as the guardian of a fellow and a friend, really, that has lived at the Life Resource Center for a long time. He's now 43 years old. Mr. Chairman, I also serve, on the board of directors of the Friends organization, which is made up of people that are mostly guardians of folks at the Wyoming Life Resource Center. And I appreciate always the tall senator from Natrona County and his understanding of these issues. And my heart always goes out when he talks about our need to take care of people with the life has dealt a profound bad set of circumstance, Mr. Chairman, whether they're at the Life Resource Center or they're in these fine community programs, which I've been proud to support throughout Wyoming. I think the tall senator makes a very important point here about the fact that the Wyoming Life Resource Center did get caught up in the cost-cutting that occurred after we left last time. And I think there was a problem with priorities within the Department of Health. We were able to bring that to the attention of the governor, and some of the folks in my organization actually went to Protection and Advocacy. The name was used previously by the good Senator Bebout. And we have seen definite improvement. So there was a management disconnect that was going on at the Life Resource Center, which was causing shortfalls in staffing, less of an emphasis on what was called active treatment, meaning getting people out to enjoy the sunshine and interact. And that was definitely happening earlier this spring. At the same time, we were very pleased with the results of the task force and the efforts that they were doing, but it was like a total disconnect between the two. We were finally able to get the attention of the governor of the state of Wyoming, and I can report happily that I think most of those problems have been addressed. Still, however, we have to realize it needs to be nurtured and taken care of. I definitely support the work of the task force. I think they've done an amazing thing to come up with a reasonable plan with all the different stakeholders. It's a very old facility with old buildings. It's hard to staff. It's spread out. And there's a lot of reasons that we're going to need to make this change. But it really does need to be done in tandem with the work at the state hospital, Mr. Chairman. And I'm pleased with the work of the committee. I've kind of partly stayed out of it. I've gone to some of their meetings, but I found that they've done very good work, and there's a lot of interested stakeholders. They've just had to absorb a bunch of information to come up with a plan that works, and I'm very proud of the work they did. And with that, may I possibly have privilege of the floor as well?
You may.
You guys, in the back of the room, this tall, handsome, long-haired gentleman is my son, George, and I'm very glad that he's here. He's over from the university. He's in the Ag College there. And, George, would you stand up? Welcome to the Senate, George. We'll find out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, thank you, Senator Case. Any further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with almost everything that has been said here, and just to elaborate a little further, this whole effort came because when the new health department director came on board, he naturally took a look at all his responsibilities and said, you know, there really isn't an overall rational plan for how we deal with these health facilities we've got. And we need to have a strategy. And Committee 10 listened to him, Mr. Chairman, and this touched off this effort, and this is the result of it. And I think they've done very good work. But I continue to be troubled by the degree of difficulty we've had at the Life Resource Center, and maybe some of it was resources that may have led to the medical service complaints that we had. I don't know that for certain, but some of it appears to me to be the staff culture there, and that can be a very difficult thing to turn around. And I had hoped we would have enough time so that set of issues would have been resolved, but with this year's, particularly the HHS report, Federal Health and Human Services, I became quite concerned that it has not been concerned to the point where I'm going to have great difficulty voting for this bill on third reading because I'm afraid of the consequences if we go build things before that set of issues has been resolved, Mr. Chairman. So I'd be happy to talk with any of the members privately, but I do have major reservations, and I feel it's my duty as the chairman of Committee 10 to raise those.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In conclusion, I really think that the work of this committee has been very transparent. We have been to Labor and Health, reported to Labor and Health throughout the process. This just didn't start as an afterthought. We're back in 2011 working on a governor's task force with this. We went through and defined and refined specifically what we wanted to correct here. And we narrowed it down to these two facilities, and with that we moved it into a legislative task force, narrowed it down further, and then we came back and reported to the legislature all through the process. We've been forthcoming with this entire project all along the way, telling you exactly what we're doing it, how we're doing it, why we're doing it. With this, I would ask the body support this. We've put a lot of work into bringing the two projects together, intermingling them, intertwining them, making sure that they fit well together. This is a good fit for both areas, and it is a good answer to mental health services in our state.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I want to make it very clear that I have no criticism of the way the committee has handled this, of the overall strategy they've come up with. I am just concerned on this one particular point. I've been trying to raise that issue politely and quietly for several years, and I thought we were on the way that it was under control and getting solved, until we had the further difficulties this past spring and summer.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I agree that there have been a little few problems, more than a few problems, serious problems this past, earlier this spring and this year. But we have to remember where we are. The Wyoming Life Resource Center is one of the most fabulous places in the entire world. There is nowhere else where people with this level of disability, these intensively involved medical needs, these profound behavior situations, have achieved such a long and wholesome life. It doesn't happen anywhere else. I will tell you about a woman named Kim who lived on a ventilator at the Wyoming Life Resource Center for 17 years. It is impossible. No one has ever even heard of anyone living under that condition for so long. She was a joy to the staff. She's fabulous. My own award, Matthew, he's immobile. He has to be turned every 2 hours to keep their skin from breaking down. I don't know if you know this, but we had a former member here, a good senator from Fremont County, Robert Peck. He died in Cheyenne. He had he became ill during the legislative session. He was at the hospital for just a couple of weeks before he died. He died with bed sores. Shameful. Shameful. The Wyoming Life Resource Center, they have not had a single bed sore in years. Yes, there are bed sores that come with people from other places, nursing homes, other programs, but they don't because they have such extraordinary care. That high level of care is built into the culture. Yes, we have a very big bump in the road that we need to deal with, to do a better job, but that culture is there. That high level of staffing, that commitment to excellence is there. It hasn't been destroyed, and this bill will build on it. And I also need, Mr. Chairman, to declare a conflict on this bill because I am the guardian of someone that's there. And I'm very glad to see this bill coming forward.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I would add, good questions, good discussion, a very important issue to the state of Wyoming, is if you look at the plans, and maybe that's what we need to do, we could bring those plans in here, the chairman of the task force could do that, and we could show you the way we set up and what we do at the state hospital in terms of the expansion and what we do and how we handle the mental health and substance abuse, then the cottages that we build at the WLRC, and then there's a Medicaid component that comes in that we haven't been able to utilize, and so there's extra funding that comes in, too, that assists us as well. When you look at the whole flow of the things, it really does make sense to do them both at the same time, and maybe that would help if we brought that packet in here and we could show you how we flow through the process, how we do the first one, we get ready to do the second one, we complete it, and how the whole thing comes together. I would ask for your support of the
It's Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on in support of the bill. A couple other things that haven't been talked about yet. With respect to management issues, I think that that's an ongoing process. And believe me, there's room for improvement in all kinds of places. There's room for improvement at the WLRC, but there's been some progress that's been made. The other thing that's been very interesting in the meeting with the folks that have been mentioned, P&A, in the meeting we had with them, which I think was the first week of the session, they flew in one of their lawyers from the East Coast, and this is a group that is federally funded and oversees the administration and the utilization of these facilities all over the country. And if you violate these things, this is one of the groups that files suit to force you to do what you're obligated to do. As been said, Mr. Chairman, that the population, that at least part of the population is served at the WLRC, in some cases are the most difficult of the most difficult. We have not only sometimes a lot of times numerous developmental disabilities. You've got acquired brain injuries that can be quite severe. And then you have a lot of times you've got a multiple component of not only developmental disabilities, but severe physical disabilities as well. And those things, of course, then that requires a special type of person to both manage that place and to serve in the place and to take the care and to provide the care that these individuals deserve. And we have this problem. This is not a unique problem to the Wyoming Life Resource Center. Part of the problem we have is we're a rural state. It's hard to get and recruit the level of competence and dedication that you need in some of these instances. And when you have small communities, we have some of the same problems in Rawlins with our state pen. We've got some of the same problems in Evanston with our state hospital. We've got some of these problems at the state at the Wyoming Life Resource Center is these small communities. It's hard to keep and maintain that therapeutic community you need to serve these individuals. One of the ideas, these were things were discussed at length in the State Health Facilities Task Force. And indeed, some of the plans are in some cases, the WLRC almost becomes a dual purpose facility. To provide, hopefully, an opportunity to have a larger and more cohesive therapeutic community to serve the folks at the WLRC and some of the other individuals that will be there. In our discussions with the advocacy group, they were quite pleased with the Wyoming. The biggest concern they had about our plans at WLRC is they thought we might be making it a little bit too big. And this is a dichotomy we find that the task force finds is there's a series of cases, one called Olmsted and another, that says that you cannot simply warehouse these people. You can't just institutionalize folks that have these types of disabilities and keep them there, that they need to have community-based services. And so there is a significant federal law that says that you can't just provide an institution and keep these people institutionalized there. You have to provide those resources and the basis and the community basis to take care of these folks. At the same time, as our good friend from the Lander area just said a minute ago, the people that have family and friends there love that place. It's a valuable place. And, in fact, you've had to walk that line is because there's so many of those that are afraid that what we're doing there will force them out of the WLRC and into community-based resource group providers. And they don't want to see that happen because they love the WLRC. So in doing that, we've taken a tremendous amount of testimony on this task force, trying to balance those two things. And in the end, I think we've done, as we went through the folks with the P&A, they said a couple things. One, they were concerned about that, but they loved the plans. They thought they were moving forward. They thought it was a step in the right direction. Their concern was we might be building a little bit too big for some of the folks that will stay there permanently because their purpose is to have them leave the institution and go back out to community-based facilities. But overall, they love the plan. The other thing they said was very interesting, too, was and this is a little bit off-topic but related, was they were very pleased with Wyoming. Wyoming has done in the last 3 years what no other state in the union has done with respect to developmental disability waivers. And that is how much we've shortened the waiting list. We came on a number of years ago. We've had instituted something called the Supplemental Waiver as opposed to the unlimited waiver, that reduce the waiting list, at least providing essential and important services to individuals, and reduce the waiting list on that in something that's far excess of anybody else in the country, and it's not quite right, and there's some tweaking that's going on. Our Committee 10 is doing a great job in working on those things and trying to fit that, but we're making great progress here, and we need to, and I understand those problems, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't work on them. We need to continue to focus on it because those folks deserve the best care that we can provide to them with in the context that we do at the WLRC. So it doesn't mean we don't work on that. We continue to work on that. But I think this will also further that along. I think this gives an opportunity, as this is built, for significant, as management comes in, that we can be working on that reset. So when this facility is built, that we can have facilities that will provide the care, will enhance the ability to provide the care. And at the same time, we need to keep working on those management issues so that we can get it right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was on one of those committees. I didn't quite go back to 2011, but several years ago I was on one of those study committees. We looked at all the facilities in the state, and we determined that the first thing we had to determine was where we were going to take care of what patients. And that went right to Title 25, to the severely disabled. So that plan was put together of where that would happen, and that just so happens it includes both those facilities. Both those facilities have to be upgraded to handle all those patients that we have. And so I'm for simultaneously doing it. That was exactly what our committee came out with, or our task force came out with, was they both need to be done so that we could handle all the patients that we were expected to take care of. And that was patients that couldn't be taken care of otherwise, that had to fall back on the state facilities. So I'm for doing both at the same time. Please pass this bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of issues have been raised. With regard to the size, frankly, I think the task force got that one right. We do need to have some capacity. If we were right now, Mr. Chairman, to lose one of our community providers, we would be hard-pressed to take care of the people, even temporarily, in state. It would be very expensive. We're a small enough state, fragile enough in our provider networks, that having a little extra size might, on occasion, Mr. Chairman, prove to be very valuable. And I think that if the various parties will be sensible, I don't think we have a real problem with the Olmstead decision on that. Mr. Chairman, second, Medicaid was mentioned. And there is a problem there, at least at the time of the last report to Committee 10, it was still a problem. If you do one of these things a little wrong and there's too many patients of the wrong kind in there that have been involuntarily committed, you can lose Medicaid reimbursement for the whole institution. And we have had extraordinary difficulties. At the last report I had, we had not been able to get a definitive answer, Mr. Chairman, out of the federal government. And my information is that we're not the only state with that problem, that the federal CMS has just been unreasonable to deal with. So we are taking, I believe, a small risk there. Mr. Chairman, that's a risk we probably ought to undertake if this is the right thing to do. My reservations are just on that one point on the way on our management and staffing problems.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I would add, and my tall, good friend, Senator from Bates Creek, is correct, that was an issue, and we've gone into the design, and actually the 50% is a factor that we got to be careful of, and we've, in fact, taken one of the units from the WLRC, shifted it to the state hospital to more than overcompensate for that particular concern. So I'm very aware of that. We've dealt with it, and we've had a lot of discussion about it. I think we're on top of that particular issue.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm just looking through the bill, and I just have a question. On page one, it says providing authorization for construction and renovation, providing for a contingent appropriation. You know, as I go to page two, on line 12, I see that there's members of the Senate. On line 16, page 16, it says members of the House. And then on 19, there's two members of the executive branch. And then as we go on in this bill, it talks about on page 6 on providing oversight. Page 7, it talks about collaborating. And my question comes to the constitutionality of the bill under Article 2, Section 1 of Separation of Powers. And is this bill actually constitutional by combining these branches of government to do something of appropriating? That's my question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has been a good discussion. I appreciate everything that's been brought into it. All things related to the constitutionality, all things go through the appropriate office and are cleared here anyway to make sure that we're doing that even before it's signed and approved and finally makes it out of the process. What you're seeing in those final pages there is just completely keeping the task force in place and making sure that the project goes forward. Sure, our good Senator from Bates Creek, in that 35-meeting process, we were very careful to address the Medicaid. I know it's a moving target with our federal government, but believe me, that and many other topics were addressed through those 35-plus meetings and countless tours and meetings held on those actual campuses. And speaking of that, we got two really great campuses in this state that we're going to go out and make good use of. I ask for your support of 291.
Question.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Absolutely, this is constitutional. You know, we appropriate, and that's what we're doing in this bill. We appropriate. The executive government executes. And very clearly, and we could provide you minutes, I don't know how many meetings we've had, all we've done is recommend. We have not made any decisions on who should be the architect, who should be the engineer, any of those decisions. Clearly, that's been left to the executive branch. The task force has made recommendations. The executive branch execute. So clearly, it's constitutional.
Any more discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 291, say aye. All opposed, say no. House Bill 291 has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
You may.
Fellow senators, please join me in welcoming a really patient group of young ladies in the back standing here. This is the leadership team for the 2016-17 Wyoming Family and Family Career and Community Leaders of America, or FCCLA. I've left a handout on your desk. Parliamentarian Public Relations Officer is Mary Ridenour from Southeast. Secretary Treasurer Officer Heidi Henderson from Tongue River. Vice President Gracie Belize Anderson from Devil's Tower, my neighbor that we're proud of. President Taylor Holliday from Tongue River. And they're here showcasing both National and Wyoming FCCLA Week. They're also celebrating CTE Month and are honored to be here. Please join me in welcoming them.
All right. Welcome to the Senate. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 192. Green Kirk will read in the bill.
House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee 2, an act relating to court fees, sponsored by Representative Nicholas, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee. There is a standing committee amendment and a committee of the whole amendment. I don't know if we want to maybe go ahead and read both of those in since they're actually connected.
Okay, will the reading clerk read in the amendments?
House Bill 192, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Okay. All right.
Let's read them one at a time.
Okay. Will the reading clerk read in the Standing Committee Amendment?
I think you read the Standing
Committee
Amendment.
Okay. Well,
Mr. Chairman, we'll ask the Majority Floor Leader Perkins to go ahead and present these bills, and he can deal with the standing of the Committee of the Whole Amendment if he'd like.
Hey, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, provide for your consideration House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee. What the Court Automation Fee was instigated probably about 10 years ago. To provide for automated and to automate the ability of the court and juries and parties to participate in the litigation process and the courthouse process. In doing that, as the members of the Senate are well aware, there is a really fuzzy gray area between who's responsible to provide these automation services and courthouses. While counties and in those political subdivisions are required to provide the courthouses, where does that stop? Does it stop at the conduits? Does it stop at the actual provision of the equipment? Where does that stop? And what this bill does is it provides an increase to the court automation fee, which is right now as part of every filing fee. It's now $10, and the effect of the bill is to increase that automation fee. That automation fee is controlled by the Supreme Court, and they use it to hire IT people, and this will expansion will also be able to now provide both not only support but equipment to courtrooms around the state. That will relieve the burden of providing the actual monitors and computer equipment, servers, the projectors that show evidence, that allow the telephones that allow people to participate from distances. It will allow the court to provide that and take that burden off counties. And that will do two things. One, it will provide some relief to counties who are financially strapped in our current situation. The other thing we'll do is help provide that uniform ability across the state so that whether you live in the Northwest, in Cook County, or whether you live in Cody, or whether you live in Cheyenne or Casper or Jackson, that you have access to the same type of facility to so that parties can participate in the judicial process. So, again, all the bill does, what the bill does initially, was simply raise the court automation fee from $10 to $20. That brings us then to Standing Committee and Amendment Number 1. And at this time, Mr. Chairman, I had moved Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 192 and asked the body's favorable consideration. The Standing Committee, in their presentation, decided that they thought that maybe it ought to be a little bit higher than that. This was the $10 was certainly a good start. The judicial branch came kind of seeking help with this bill, wanting to be feeling that pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered, and so ultimately came with a bill that took care of most of the problem, but not all the problem. The members of the Judiciary Committee, your committee number one, looked at that, and so what you see before you is that my understanding of the Standing Committee amendment simply raised it from the basically, it'll have the effect of raising this from $10 to $15. So that's the effect of the bill, of the amendment. And so you see in Section 2 then, they're talking about just drawing a bright line so we know exactly which cases are subject, which filings are subject to the new or increased automation fee. With that, that takes care of the explanation of the Standing Committee amendment. Stand for any questions on the amendment.
Any questions on the amendment?
Call for the question.
Okay. So question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 192, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Standing Committee Amendment has passed.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 192, I have to admit that this was deeper intrigue among the Judiciary Committee than I was fully apprised, and so I would like you to maybe we should defer to the sponsor of the bill, Senator Hicks, sponsor of the amendment, Senator Hicks.
Okay, well, the reading clerk read in the amendment.
House Bill 192, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 14.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 192, or House Bill 192. This is just a cleanup. This is a technical correction that staff caught because it's once we added $25 onto those fees, you had to also add $5 onto the 80 fee. It was an additive component. So it's just a technical correction to make a balance. I'd ask for your favorable consideration on standing committee of the whole amendment number one. Thank you.
Question. Okay, question being called on standing or committee of the whole amendment number one. All those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion to adopt committee of the whole amendment number one to House Bill 192, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Any discussion? Okay. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that do so in a favorable recommendation of House Bill 192, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 192 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 37. The reading clerk will read in the House Bill.
House Bill 37, engrossed, Teacher Accountability, an act relating to teacher accountability sponsored by the Education Committee, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger, Senator Pappas, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, move when Committee the Whole rise and report it do so with the do pass recommendation on House Bill 37 and defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 37, Teacher Accountability, is pretty substantive, but it's a long time coming in how we've been working on education accountability. I'll remind the body that education accountability has been a two-phase program over the years, where phase one has been leader accountability, and phase two has basically been a teacher accountability component, or I should say phase one was more of a building accountability concept. What House Bill 37 does is over the last few years, the last few education accountability bills that have been brought have pushed forward in time the teacher component of accountability, recognizing how incredibly difficult it was, as well as unpopular, and honestly from a policy standpoint, we've become pretty convinced that holding teachers explicitly accountable at the state level was not a wise endeavor and that it was more appropriate to have the accountability for the teachers governed based on local control, the local school board, and Chapter 29 rules that would be promulgated or have been promulgated, I should say, by the Department of Education. So this House bill, first and foremost, recognizes that change where teacher accountability at the state level is eliminated, so that's phase two of the education accountability system, is eliminated through this legislation. It's still going to take place. There still is teacher accountability. It's just that it is maintained at the district level, and you'll see there's some parameters that will, as we go through this bill, that will provide some guidance on what that local control is going to provide, but realistically, that's already been done through what we call the Chapter 29 rules that have been promulgated through the Department of Education. So, Mr. Chairman, walking through the legislation, page 2, there's a lot of text that has been struck. That is the evaluation system, which was previously going to be adopted at the state level. You see, instead, the State Board of Education is requiring that or shall promulgate rules and regulations for the submission and approval of a school district teacher performance evaluation. Then going on to page 3, there are some parameters there. The State Board shall, in consultation with local school boards, establish criteria for that school district teacher performance evaluation system and provide flexibility to the districts on how they would do that to improve their classroom instruction. So that's a major policy change, but it's been a long time coming. The bottom of page 3, we're on the duties of the boards of trustees for the school districts. What this says is rather than conforming to the statewide teacher accountability system, This is specifically for initial contract teachers being evaluated. It will basically say that they have to refer to their Chapter 29 rules where they develop a system for teacher evaluation, which is going to be which is no longer based on student performance, but is based on whatever they come up with for their district pursuant to Chapter 29 rules. Similar language on page 4, lines 4 through 17 in Romanette 18, but that's for continuing contract teachers, where once again they'll be reviewed annually at first by their school district pursuant to their standards, and you can see on lines 12 through 14, until the teacher has been classified as effective under the performance evaluation system utilized by the district, after that, evaluation shall occur a minimum of once every 3 years. Those shall be provided with written results, and there's some other requirements, but again, most of that is in the Chapter 29 rules. Bottom of page 4 is conforming language. Page 5, further conforming language. We're striking teachers from a lot of things where we were talking about teacher and leader accountability. Now we're eliminating that and making that a district function, so the teacher accountability is being struck. Page 6, you see that we had a paragraph on line 17 through 20, and you'll see it again on page 7, that was going to go into effect in 2019 and 20, talking about the teacher education accountability system. That is being struck, so that was new language that's never gone into effect. We're returning to the old language regarding continuing teacher contracts. You see the same thing on page 6, moving on to page 7, that we're eliminating language that would have gone into effect in 1920. On page 7, once again, we have conforming language since we no longer have that requirement. And the bottom of page 7, the Section 2 repealer, is a teacher performance linked to that educational accountability at the statewide level where it's the specific statute we're repealing since it no longer applies, since there won't be the state-level teacher accountability system. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I'd stand for any questions if there are any.
Any discussion on the bill? Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking on page 4 where we talk about establishing standards for teacher effectiveness, and that's clear enough. What I'm unclear on is on pages 6 and 7 under continuing contract where there is not a cross-reference to teacher effectiveness. In fact, we strike out on page 7, lines 12 through 13, the reference to satisfactory performance evaluation. Should there not be a cross-reference to effective teaching, teaching effectiveness in the continuing contract language as the basis for a dismissal with cause? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The short answer is no, and the reason is that it's already elsewhere in statute. 21.7.110 provides that, and that's certainly the primary cause for that type of dismissal. So there's no reason to have that cross-reference at that point. This is current language we're going back to. It's the language that's in effect now, and the thought of the Select Committee and of the Joint Education Committee was just not to enact that future language since 1920 is when this would come into effect. We have not been operating under that language yet and wouldn't be operating. It would be new language if we were to add a cross-reference back. That said, Mr. Chairman, if you were to cross-reference 21.7.110 and just include the entirety of it, that would be fine. But since it's elsewhere in statute, there's really nothing gained nor lost by doing so.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? Senator Hicks.
Just a follow-up there, and I haven't had a chance to look at 21.7.110, but this also talks about salary increases, not only continuing contracts, but also salary increases. So if we don't bring in 21.7.110, the way I read this, and not having reviewed that, does that also cover salary increases?
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'll restate the fact that most of this has never been implemented. Most of this language is speculative 1920 language that is not going to be implemented, that refers back to a statute that would exist relevant to teacher evaluations linked to student performance through the phase two of the education accountability model. So statute as it stands right now, certainly under the statute that I referenced, 21.7.110, talks about salary and termination and other things elsewhere in statute that lead to those being the bases for hiring decisions. Of course, performance is the key. But, Mr. Chairman, we have Chapter 29 rules which already relate to all of this at the district level. Recall that Phase 2 was bringing this to the state level. So it exists. There's legal authority. Everything is working just fine at the local level. It's whether or not we're making those decisions at the statewide level that this legislation affects. The decision of your Joint Education Committee and the Select Education Accountability Committee was that these decisions were better made at the district level than at the state level. That's really the key difference. Nothing in here changes policy, really, from what it is now. It's a speculative policy that has not gone into effect yet that this legislation stops from going into effect a couple of years in the future.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, 21.7.110 says the board may suspend or dismiss a teacher or terminate a continuing contract teacher for incompetency, neglect of duty, immorality, insubordination, physical incapacity, failure to perform job duties in a satisfactory manner, and then beginning school year 2019 to 2020, each school year thereafter, inadequate performance is determined through performance evaluation and so forth, which is the same language that's being struck on page 6 and 7 of the bill. It just seems to me entirely consistent that that language of Romanet 7 in 21.7.110 should be struck, and a cross-reference to teaching effectiveness should be put back in there. And the final basis for dismissal is conviction of a felony or any other good or just cause. I wonder if it doesn't behoove us to be equally specific with regard to teaching effectiveness in the basis for termination, particularly given that 110 contains this cross-reference to the standard we are now deleting on pages 6 and 7. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. My failure to catch that particular section is of Romanet 7 is being repealed. My point that having a cross-reference to teaching effectiveness remains, though, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there's an interest in referring back to 21.7.110 through a cross-reference, we can certainly do that, but I'll just reiterate to the body that the language that we'll have left after this is struck is basically the language that we've been operating under for at least a decade. So there isn't a substantive change due to this. There is a future, or would have been a future, statutory change enacted as of the 1920 school year, which would have linked it to Romanet 7, which is the statewide education accountability assessment for teachers. That has not gone into effect yet. Right now, we use the Chapter 29 rules and local control, where they certainly would terminate a teacher based on their performance. This is taking it sort of to that state level. If this passes, honestly, in these paragraphs, nothing changes from the current practice. So if there's a desire to add something, that would be adding something new, which has not been the practice for the last decade. So it would be a change of policy, certainly something we could do. But this is not amending current practice. This is preventing a future change from being enacted. I hope that clarifies, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
See, and this is where I get really confused, because when I look at this, I mean, we have now, with this bill, we've stricken all the language that would put any accountability for teachers into effect. We're eliminating the cross-reference, we're eliminating the time reference, and so we're saying, in the end of the day, I think the meat of the bill is on pages 3 and 4, which is that we're gonna once a year use these performance standards using multiple methods and data protocols. You're going to do this evaluation, and then and then under Romanet 8 on page 4, we're going to establish a teacher performance evaluation system and require performance. But I don't see anywhere else where that becomes taught. I don't see anywhere else where that they're held accountable. I mean, you get your performance evaluation, but it appears to me at the end of the day, you're still on continuing contract status. We're repealing the provision in this bill that would tie dismissal to inadequate performance or subpar, or whatever term you would like to use with respect to the in accountability. So at the end of the day, unless I'm mistaken, we have these performance evaluations, which are going to be nice, I guess, but they don't think they mean anything. And then if I remember what we did earlier is we still have principals or leaders in accountability, and they're subject to dismissal for accountability. But with this bill, it seems to me we've taken teachers out of the accountability model, other than the fact that they're going to have annual performances. Am I missing something? It appears to me that teachers are no longer in the accountability model, other than the fact that they get reviewed once a year.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, the good majority floor leader's not missed a thing. We took teachers out. And it was a discussion that was lengthy that we had in the interim. We still have leader accountability in place, but we don't have teacher accountability in place. And the testimony was extensive that teachers could be evaluated locally just as good as they could through a system. That's exactly what happened. And you know, the whole committee didn't support that, but that's at the end of the day, that's exactly what happened.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, if I were a clever lawyer, which I'm not, and I were representing a teacher that was to be terminated because they consistently failed to show that they were an effective teacher, I would point to 21.7.110 and I'd say, being an ineffective teacher who doesn't improve or does not respond well to instruction and help in improving, I'd say that's not incompetency, neglect of duty, it's not immorality, it's not insubordination, it's not physical incapacity, it's not failure to perform duties as in a job description, and it's not a conviction of a felony. You can't terminate this teacher simply because they're ineffective. I feel very strongly we've got to have a cross-reference to effectiveness and inability to become effective as the basis for the termination of any teacher, continuing contract or otherwise. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more discussion? Okay, seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 37, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
That passes. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. Well, aye. All those opposed, stand. No. House Bill 37, having failed a roll call vote. Oh, excuse me. Okay. Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson?
No.
No. Antomi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe? Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert? Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
No.
No. Pappas?
No.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 9 aye, 19 no, 2 excused.
House Bill 37, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 22. The clerk will read in the House Bill.
House Bill 22, Business Entities Communications Contact, an act relating to business entities, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 22, Business Entities Communications Contract. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read in the amendment?
House Bill 22, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 22, and for further explanation and of the bill and the amendment, I would yield to Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. this bill, Business Entities and Communications Contract, was a product of your Joint Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions Committee. We worked it through the interim. Brought to us by the Secretary of State's office. And just a little background, you all probably recall the global scandal over the leaked data from the Panama law firm, affectionately known as the Panama Papers. during that issue, the state's auditors found that the registered agent failed to maintain the required statutory information. They eventually were able to get that information, and the issue was resolved back in June. But it brought to light a loophole in our law. And so this House Bill 22, pertains to fixing that loophole in the Registered Offices and Agents Act. Under Wyoming business laws, every single business entity, is required to have a registered agent. Registered agent is a individual or business that is physically located here in Wyoming to be the face of the company, and they will accept service of process on behalf of their business. If an individual lives in Wyoming and wants to set up an entity, they can serve as their own registered agent. However, if they don't live in Wyoming, they would have to find a registered agent who is physically located here in Wyoming to serve that role. In 2007, the Registered Office of Agents Act was passed, which required certain information to be kept by registered agents and gives the Secretary of State's office audit authority to ensure that this information is complete. And so when law enforcement calls on the Secretary of State and needs to know the people behind the company, the Secretary of State can get that information. This information is not public. It's not kept public, and so it's kept private by the registered agent and provided when the Secretary of State's office requests it. So the two things that the Secretary of State has to, or that the registered agents have to keep, are the key players, the names and addresses of the directors, officers, managers, managing partners. And the second is a communications contact, and that's what this bill addresses. That's a natural person who is an officer, director, employee, or a designated agent of each entity who is authorized to receive the communications from the registered agent. Now, this bill does remove the employee and requires that this person be a true person and be one of the officers, directors of the company. So the problem and the reason for this bill is that the Secretary of State auditors, while performing audits, were finding that the term designated agent was being misused. The registered agent would list themselves for thousands of entities, thinking they would fall under the designated agent description. This was not the intent of the law. The intent of the law was that there was a true person behind that entity, not just a contact person or an employee of the registered agent. So this bill fixes that, removes the term designated agent, so that a true person associated with the company will be listed as a communications contact. So, with that said, we move to the bill. It's real simple. If you look at page one, the first change, simply, instead of a business address, we really need a mailing and physical address. So that was just a cleanup. On page two is where we have the meat of the bill. And let me address the Standing Committee Amendment. If you look on page five, or excuse me, line five of page two, it says the designated communications contact for the entity shall be the entities, and then there's a list of what those people are, and at the bottom it includes employee. What we're doing in the Standing Committee Amendment, we're deleting lines 19 through 21, the employee, because we're taking them out of being able to be a communications contact. And then we're putting the language up in line 6 so that it shall read, the designated communications contact for the entity shall not be the entity's registered agent or an employee of the entity's registered agent, and shall be the entity's, and then the list is Romanet 1 through 5. So that's the amendment, simply just taking out employee and restructuring the paragraph. So I would ask you to please vote aye on the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 22, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
That motion carries. We're back on the bill.
Pretty much, Mr. Chairman, I've dispatched with the meat of the bill. Everything's on page 2. We're requiring that the designated contact be a director, officer, limited liability company member, managing partner, or trustee, and we've removed the employee. So that's the bill. I'll stand for questions.
Okay, Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, as I read this, I have a question about the physical or the natural person. It says here on page 2 all the things that will be, all the things that constitutes the entity, but then my question, is there going to be a physical person sitting in an office for 8 or 10 or 3 hours a day to meet this requirement?
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, to answer the good senator's question, no, there's no requirement for that. This simply requires, what this really addresses is the shell corporations coming to Wyoming and using a registered agent service to just provide a housing authority to be in Wyoming, and they're just shell corporations, so they really don't have solid information behind them. And so by requiring them to disclose who their communications contact is, puts a little bit more skin in the game, a little more transparency about who's doing business in our state and why. But there is no requirement that anyone be in-house or physically even here.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm struggling with this bill dramatically. I remember when probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe 7, that we had a significant difference of opinion with the then Secretary of State about the effect of what this does. And where we are right now, the state of the law, Mr. Chairman, is that you have a registered agent, and anybody can be a registered agent. Anyone in here can be a registered agent. Generally, you've got some mills where they go do that. A lot of lawyers are registered agents. A lot of you are registered agents for your individual companies if you've got those.
And so the Secretary of State came to us as part of the history lesson, said he came with, he wanted a bill that was proposed that said, you know what, we need to have, with these commercial registered agents, they need to have this designated, they need to know who, this physical address and business telephone number of a natural person who is an officer, director, employer, designated agent. And so the former Secretary of State said, well, all you really have to do is be able to have us send them a bill once a year for a registered agent fee, and if you get a response, then that's who you know it is. That's all it's going to take. And so all the enforcement duties with respect to keeping track of this stuff was foisted off onto the registered agent. Oftentimes, and all it takes to be a commercial registered agent is that, I think, yeah, there's 8 or 10 entities registered, and you're a commercial registered agent. I'd submit that I wouldn't be surprised if there might be a few people in there who are registered agent for more than 10, just in the who they're registered agents for. And so now what you do is you're going to take the, and so you're going to say, so the Secretary of State can say when the feds come and ask what's going on here, they say they went that away. Talk to your registered agent. The registered agent goes down and says, well, I know because this is what the former Secretary of State says. Well, if you send a bill to an address and they pay you, then you know who the, you know who signed the check. And you know where the address is. That's all it takes. Well, now, this bill says, the contact for the entity shall be. So now you're telling the registered agent, who has no authority to demand this, has no authority to say something's done under perjury, has no authority to enforce this, has to ensure that this is the director, the officer, a member of the company, the limited liability company, the managing partner, or trustee, or the employee. How does the registered agent do that? And yet, if he doesn't, now the registered agent will be in violation and subject to fine. And this is the problem from, we go back to it, and this is, we did it earlier today, we said we made a mistake. We made a mistake 7 years ago, and this is going to compound it. I submit to the body that the Secretary of State's office is a recording office. You record things in there. You record articles of organization, you record articles of incorporation, you record registered agents, you record statewide security interests, you record things in the office of the Secretary of State because it's a recording office, just like the county clerk or anywhere else. And if we want to do this right, we should come back and we should put this back to the Secretary of State's office, and we can make it confidential, so you have to have certified, you have to have some kind of court order or something so that not just anybody can come in. You can make it so it's not public information. I don't think it should be public information necessarily outside the registered agent. But what this does is it simply allows the Secretary of State's office to now go when the feds or somebody else come and say they went that away, and then you come into ports and so do I have any sympathy for those guys that have 1,000 registered agents? Absolutely not. Do I have sympathy for you or me or anybody else who's got a few people that he represents that he maybe helped them out a few years ago? I used to know who they were, but now it's 10 years later. He's sending and doing exactly what the former Secretary of State said. You send him an invoice, send you back, you know who they are, that's good enough. Now it's no longer good enough, and now the registered agent's going to be in trouble. This is not the way to go about it. This imposes a restriction and a duty on a registered agent that certainly wasn't contemplated when we started down this road, on and against the bill.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So, perhaps I'm missing the weight of this bill, but when I look at page 1, line 12, the requirement and the onus is on the entity. So every entity shall provide to its registered agent or to the Secretary of State and keep current the name, mailing address, and physical address, if different, versus just a P.O. box, potentially, in order to prevent shell corporations from taking advantage of being a business in Wyoming, taking advantage of our consumers. A telephone number of a natural person, so we're making sure it's a live human body, but they don't actually have to be here or open for any amount of hours. That's authorized to receive communications from the registered agent. I mean, the registered agent should have somebody to receive communications from if they're opening up an LLC, agreeing to accept service on behalf of this company here in the state, which is what a registered agent does. So in the event you need to sue a company, you sue the registered agent's office, which is the benefit of having a registered agent, which is required under the law. So what this law is actually doing is simply requiring the entity who is using the registered agent service to provide them their name, the name of the business, the physical address of the business, and who they are, and they have to be an actual officer of the company. I don't think that this is too onerous. I don't think it's too much information to provide, particularly when we have been faced with the challenges that this state has been faced with of having an overabundance of, frankly, illegal shell corporations doing business in the state of Wyoming. So perhaps I'm missing the significance of this, but simply providing to your registered agent the name of the contact information of a director of the business shouldn't be that big of a deal. On and for the bill.
Senator Scott.
And Ms. Chairman, again, on for the bill, this is a problem that Committee 7 has been wrestling with for some time. And you know, the whole job of the registered agent is to accept the service process, give a place where somebody that has legitimate need to get at the real people can do it, and it helps if there's a criminal investigation going on. It helps to have somebody real in the company to get at so that you can find out who the company really is. And if they don't have the ability to contact one of these people that's listed, you've defeated the whole purpose of having a registered agent. And it goes beyond shell corporations. My understanding of shell corporation is it's been created so they can sell the corporate shell to somebody that needs a corporation. And that's perfectly legitimate business, I suppose. That's not so much the problem as somebody who's using the corporation for some kind of criminal purposes elsewhere. And the testimony in committee, both I think in the standing committee and certainly in the joint interim committee, was that we're finding a lot of people were defeating the purpose of the registered agent by listing their corporate contact as one of their own employees. And that is a real problem, Mr. Chairman. I won't represent to you the bill will cure all the problems, but it's going to make it a lot more difficult. And I would suggest that if you feel that we're being too onerous by saying it has to be a director, officer, et cetera, on that list, you go back and reinsert what the standing committee took out, lines 19 through 21, so that you can still, it can still just be an employee, but it needs to be a real employee of the corporation and not the registered agent's employee. So that would be the remedy. Rather, I think it would be a great mistake to kill the bill because we do have an ongoing problem in this area. And, Mr. Chairman, I won't represent to you this will kill all the problems. Somebody that has really got a criminal intent can probably get around it still, but this will make it a good deal more difficult.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the body, I'm going to take you back on a silver screen journey. Have any of you guys ever remember seeing Chinatown, you know, with Jack Nicholson? You know, there was a situation in there where there were dummy corporations. And essentially, if anybody wants to get around these laws, they can get around them, whether we pass this law, whether we change the law, whether we leave it the same, they're going to be able to get around it. Because they can get somebody from a senior home, just like in Chinatown, put them on the board of directors of their fake corporation, and you'll have a real person who actually is a member of the corporation. But they won't know anybody. Then you go down to an Alzheimer's center. Pick up somebody from an Alzheimer's center. Put them on the board of directors of the corporation. They won't know anything about it. So, you know, if somebody really wants to get around it, you might think you're doing the state a service by passing this bill. But essentially, Mr. Chairman, a crook is a crook. No matter what we write in laws, they'll figure a way around it.
Go away.
Then you're another cop.
It's a tough follow-up. I guess we should just stop crime fighting. I think that, yes, criminals will always find a way to skirt the law, so it's important to stay on top of that piece and to be proactive in making it harder and just not laying down and letting them take advantage of the state. So I think what's also very important to understand, too, is that under current law, 17-18-107, the duties of the registered agent are still the same. So under subparagraph A5A, the registered agent is required to maintain the name and addresses of each entity's directors, officers, LLC managers, managing partners, trustees, or persons serving in a similar capacity. The name, address, and business telephone number of a natural person who is an officer, director, employee, or designated agent of each entity represented who is authorized to receive communication from the registered agent. So I don't think the duties here are being increased. I think it's just one measure of protection. Will there still be corrupt individuals out there who are intending to defraud the public and create illegal entities? Certainly. But is this one measure that we have been asked to take into place that would help maybe provide some protections? Indeed, it is. I don't think we are enhancing any duties or creating any additional liabilities for those registered agents. It's just putting a little bit more skin in the game for those corporations who want to do business in Wyoming.
Senator Perkins.
Senator, I would just respectfully disagree. I think what it does, it creates a false sense of security. I mean, the statute says is that you're going to provide, you shall provide this information to your registered agent. Registered agent, you can lie to your registered agent all you want. That's why this information ought to be in the Secretary of State's office, because if you lie to the Secretary of State, it's crime. It's not much of a crime to lie to a registered agent.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like us to move this bill along. And, I think we could stand to have a little bit more discussion about the Standing Committee Amendment and the employee. But really, I think this is not a requirement of the registered agent. It's a requirement that the entity have this on file. That's really what it is. That the state of Wyoming, when it lends its good name to a company that's here, that we have this information. Does anybody think that this information is too onerous? Honestly. And maybe if you added employee, that would get that would make it more acceptable to some. But this is not a bad thing, Mr. Chairman, to know who's behind the corporations that use Wyoming's good name. I hope you'll support the bill.
Any more discussion? Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'm just concerned about the section of this bill on page 1, line 14. We're already doing this. I don't know whether this is really necessary. And then the other thing that concerns me, that we're making another section here and that we didn't put any privacy in here, because there are reasons why, for instance, a close LLC, which we wouldn't want that some of that stuff to be public, or there isn't actually public information. So I'm just concerned whether this bill is really necessary, since we're just duplicating what we already do. Thank you.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, this information is not public information. This information is held by the registered agent, and it's only available when requested by the Secretary of State, similar to what happened in the Panama Papers issue. That information is not public. So I really think that this bill, you know, it's not an end-all, be-all. It's not going to fix everything, but I think it still removes a layer of anonymity which some of these entities are really looking for. I mean, we just can't have the registered agent employee being the contact for thousands of corporations. It's just not right. And so, yeah, while people can skirt around the law, this certainly will help the Secretary of State's office close that loophole a little bit. So on and for the bill.
Member discussion. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 22, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
That motion carries. Division being called. All in favor, please stand. All opposed, please stand. Ten opposed. House Bill 22 is passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, having voted on the prevailing side, I ask for reconsideration. Immediate reconsideration of House Bill number 37, Teacher Accountability.
Okay. You have heard the motion. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Reconsideration.
Okay, the motion is to reconsider House Bill 37.
House Bill 37, Teacher Accountability.
Okay, the motion is to reconsider House Bill 37, Teacher Accountability.
Agar excused. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Downton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
Peterson? Aye. Ruffus?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 20 aye, 9 no, 1 excused.
Motion to reconsider House Bill 37 has passed. We will now vote on whether House Bill 37 will pass Committee of the Whole.
Agar, excused. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Downton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? No. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? No. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson? No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 15 aye, 14 no, 1 excused.
Okay, by your vote, House Bill 37 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next resolution for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 8. The reading clerk will read in the resolution.
House Joint Resolution 8, Federal Responsibility for American Indian Health Care, a joint resolution requesting Congress to uphold the federal trust responsibility to provide for the health care needs of American Indians, sponsored by Representative Allen, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? President Bebout.
What number is it? Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move the committee hold rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 8 do pass. I'll yield to the person to discuss this bill, which is... Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I brought this bill forward from Representative Allen, and it has to do with the relationship between the tribes and Medicaid and health care on our reservations. And you can read all of the whereases and wherefores if you want to through here. But essentially what this does is that it asks Congress to honor the responsibilities that they have for the tribes for the health care services that they're responsible for from the federal trust responsibility to provide the health care the needs of American Indians. And it goes way back to where basically what they were promised for when they got on the reservation. And it goes into saying that that they should be paying 100% of that, and that's what was promised in that regard. And it's up to around that $3 million. So it's something that would probably fall to the state if this didn't happen, and we'd probably have to put them under our regular Medicaid. And it goes into the FMAP there, and that's where your $3 million go. So I think it's really important that we tell Congress, I guess, how we feel about it, how we want to support our tribes, and the importance of the United States promises to the Indian nations. And there's a lot of other things as far as different details that was discussed in committee. But the long and short of it is that that's the right thing for Congress to do, and we're giving them some direction, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, you're ready for the question. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to go along to get along until I heard the right thing to do, the term right thing to do. That jumped me up. Just so I understand that Indian health care is a responsibility of the federal government to every registered member. It's a question to every registered member of the tribe, of a tribe, regardless of their income and regardless of their economic circumstance. Is that true?
Senator Meyer.
As I understand it, I think the answer to that would be... Okay, as I understand it and what we heard in committee, the answer to that would be yes, and the way the federal government applies that is through the Medicaid program.
Senator Burns.
So, and again, I'm trying to understand this. So if you're a member of a registered tribe, regardless of your economic circumstance, let's say you're wealthy or well-to-do, you are automatically registered for Medicaid, or do you get I thought this is a separate program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I know that for the Shoshone members in my district, federal health care is required because of the Treaty of 1868. In which health care was promised. I don't know how it works for all other tribes. It does work to be kind of a combination of three ways of providing services, and Medicaid is involved, Mr. Chairman. Also, what's involved is that tribes may have and run their own health care facilities and be reimbursed by the federal government. That's called a 638 process. We have the Arapaho tribe in Wyoming is attempting to do that. The other process is for the federal government to directly provide health care services by maintaining and manning clinics and facilities, and that's the way it has traditionally worked on the Wind River Reservation, and that's the way it works for the Shoshone tribe now. Now, how Medicaid plays into that, I'm not entirely certain, but I do not think it is correct that a very wealthy tribe, and there are some very wealthy tribes, get all their health care paid. I think it depends on the circumstances. What happens here in Wyoming is that the amount of money made available for the two tribes is limited, and the budgets run out before the end of the year. And it causes a lot of issues in Fremont County. There's issues about uncompensated care, but even more significant, there's people that don't receive the care they deserve because they only receive kind of an emergency basis care to deal with chronic diseases. It's a very poor situation, and it's somewhat wrapped up in Medicaid, but I would ask that we look into that a little bit more before second reading to give you a definitive answer. We did approve, I'm trying to remember if it was last year or the year before, I think it was last year, that the tribes participate in the state would sponsor both tribes in participating with a federal waiver to access more Medicaid money for the people of the Wind River Reservation. It was approved by the legislature, but that effort has been stalled at the federal government and has not been approved, so that additional money has not been made available. That's everything I know at this point in time, and I would be happy to get more answers, but I don't think it's fair to say that they automatically get Medicaid, irregardless of their wealth status, et cetera. It's fairly complicated. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the resolution, and you can draw your own conclusions to whether the resolution will do any good or not, but this... And, Mr. Chairman, this issue takes me way back. When I first got out of school, I worked for the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, which dates me. That's been split up long since. But there was a proposal to transfer from Interior to HEW the Indian Bureau of Indian Affairs. And I can remember writing at that time, 45 years ago, whenever, that was unwise for HEW to take that on because the Bureau of Indian Affairs had been mismanaged since Grant's administration. And I think this is a further reflection of that. Mr. Chairman, I would further say that for years we've known that the IHS on the reservation has not been adequately funded to take care of the real problems that they do have there. I suppose theoretically there may be some wealthy individuals, but mostly they're not. And the quality of the service, there have been good people there, but it just hasn't been adequate. And this is an attempt to make the feds live up to their responsibilities. Mr. Chairman, this is one more reason not to trust the federal government when they come making promises.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to add some personal information, being an enrolled member of a tribe, if I were to want to receive services at an Indian health service clinic, I believe it depends on just the availability of the services that they're able to provide at that clinic. But I think I can tell you that because of long wait lines, and sadly I've heard people say, you know, don't get sick before money runs out at IHS. It's not always the most desired healthcare facility to receive some of your healthcare needs. So while I can speak to IHS, I can't really speak to the federal Medicaid assistance percentage, but my guess would be that you'd have to qualify and income levels would apply. So someone like me who doesn't live near the reservation and doesn't meet these you know, federal requirements would not be eligible to receive funding for my healthcare. Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple. Sitting here visiting with the president, it was when he was still appropriation chairman of appropriations, so it had to have been at least 3 years ago, that the tribes came to us during the budget session, made a presentation to an appropriations committee, and essentially had we're looking for, trying to remember, it's 11D waiver. Basically, it was, for lack of a better term, not exactly, but basically it was Medicaid expansion for the tribes. And the tribes, being individual and sovereign nations, have the right to make that election. And this legislature, the Joint Appropriations Committee, honored that request, sent it out to the floor, and the floor honored it. And both sides of the legislature honored that request. And in my recollection, it was for approximately $16 million a biennium or a year. And in testimony from folks that came over from the reservation to testify, even though that's at least 3 years ago, they haven't got a dime, not one dime from the federal government with respect to that. It continues to be bogged down in paperwork and red tape. And I think in there's some speculation, may even be in somewhat of a retribution or at least a pressure, because Wyoming didn't expand Medicaid as a state. As has been said, this was a promise made by the federal government to the tribes as a part of that treaty that established the reservation and provide for that care. And while I don't particularly care, I kind of subscribe to the former president's ideas on joint resolutions and how effective they are. I think that we should send this one. This one's a little bit different stride. I think it shows our support for our Native American tribes, recognizing our sovereignty and the fact that they haven't been treated fairly under a treaty, a promise made to them by the federal government, and we ought to do what we can to assist them in achieving their what they're entitled to under the treaty.
Okay, question being called. Unless there's any further discussion. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Joint Resolution 8, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Joint Resolution 8 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19. Will the reading clerk please read in the House Bill?
House Bill 19, Engrossed, Sales from Remote Sellers, an Act Relating to Sales Tax, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Wasserberger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 19, Sales and Remote Sellers, and ask for your favorable support. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate File 19 do
House Bill.
House Bill 19 do pass.
It looks like,
and I would turn it over to the person standing up to explain the bill, since my chairman was gone.
Okay, Senator Wasserberger.
Oh, thank you.
Go ahead. You have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 19 is an old friend, and we have heard it on the Senate floor before. House Bill 19 relates to sales tax and provides for the collection of sales tax from out-of-state sellers. The bill also provides for a declaratory judgment action and provides for injunction during the pendency of the action. The bill limits when the liability for the sales tax will go into effect and provides for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, I will walk you through the bill, and I will move the standing committee amendment at the appropriate time.
Would you like to have that read in, Senator Wasserberger?
Certainly.
Okay. The clerk will read in the amendment.
House Bill 19, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, lines 5 through 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we will take up the Standing Committee Amendment when we get to it as we walk through the bill. Mr. Chairman, on page 2, line 2, the bill states that any seller of tangible property that does not make a physical presence in the state of Wyoming must collect sales tax if they meet two requirements. On page 2, line 13, at little I, the seller must have gross sales in the state of Wyoming of $100,000. And on page 2, line 18, little I, the seller has sold tangible personal property of over 200 transactions or sales. So what this essentially does is create two thresholds. You must have sales of $100,000 or 200 transactions. So this would allow the smaller remote sellers to be exempt from collecting sales tax. And Mr. Chairman, House Bill 19 would enhance current law by simply making clear that Wyoming expects all sellers to comply with the state sales tax law. It does not create a new tax on anyone. Wyoming has a simple sales tax system. Most goods and services are subject to the tax. Wyoming has adopted the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. Remote sellers do not comply with the law today because they want to gain an advantage over our Main Street sellers, not because they cannot comply. Remote sellers who make substantial number of deliveries into our state or have large gross revenues from Wyoming benefit extensively from the state's market, including the economy generally, as well as the state infrastructure. They should collect our sales tax, and some of these remote sellers are collecting taxes for other states. Continuing on with the bill, at the bottom of page 2, line 22, the bill Department of Revenue may bring an action in this state to obtain of the seller to remit sales tax under subsection A of this act. And, Mr. Chairman, we are to the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will explain it at this time. Ask for the Senate, and I ask for the Senate's favorable recommendation. Mr. Chairman, on page 3. So, Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 19 at this time. And essentially what it does, it says the filing of a declaratory judgment action under subsection B of this section operates as an injunction during the pendency of action. And then on page 3, line 10, it deletes who is a party to the action. And then on page 3, line 12, at the end of the period, it deletes the remainder of line 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17, Mr. Chairman. And essentially, that's the amendment.
Hey, does anybody have any questions on the amendment?
Question on the amendment.
Hey, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Wasberger's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, House Bill 19, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That motion carries. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Continuing with the bill on page 3, lines 5 through 7. Excuse me. We already did that. Let's move on. Continuing on with the bill on page 3, line 19, the bill states if a court has entered a judgment against a seller or otherwise lifted or dissolved an injunction under this section, the department shall assess and apply the obligation under subsection A of this section from the date the judgment is entered or the injunction is lifted with respect to that seller. On page 4, line 4, a seller complying voluntarily may seek a recovery of taxes, penalties, or interest by following the procedures established in this chapter. No claim or for a refund or recovery of taxes, penalties, or interest shall be granted on the basis that the seller lacked a physical presence in this state. And essentially, that comes to us from a Supreme Court opinion from 1992, which is called the Quill versus North Dakota case. Continuing on, page 4, line 18, the bill states, no seller who remits sales tax voluntarily or otherwise under this section shall be liable to any person who claims that the sales tax has been overcollected if any provision of this act is later deemed unlawful. On page 5, line 1, the bill states, nothing in this section shall be construed to affect the obligation of any purchaser in this state to remit use of tax from the applicable transaction. The bill defines vendor on page 5, line 15. And then finally, the bill states on page 5, line 18, this act shall not apply to any tax liability arising prior to the effective date of this act. So the question of the Senate is simply this. Why should Wyoming seek a lawsuit as a result of this bill? Mr. Chairman, this bill seeks to support our senior senator in the U.S. Senate and his efforts to level the playing field for Main Street retailers throughout Wyoming. As you know, our senior senator in Washington has advocated for a remote seller's use tax for many years. To complicate the issue, the United States Supreme Court in Quill versus North Dakota in 1992, which found that a remote seller must have a physical presence in the state or it cannot be required to collect a sales use tax by the state. Now there is a South Dakota lawsuit winding its way through the legal system, and Wyoming should not depend on another state to win the day, but should take a strong stance to change the underlying outdated Supreme Court opinion that is having such detrimental effect on our state. Also, Wyoming is in the jurisdiction of the 10th Circuit Court, and the court issued a very helpful decision for challenging the Quill decision. A Wyoming lawsuit would benefit significantly from that decision. And, Mr. Chairman, I believe hopefully that explains a lot of the bill.
Any further discussion or questions? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just brief comments and great job by my colleague from the Energy City. Sorry to leave you hanging there to introduce that, but he did a great job. This is your committee, Revenue Committee's major bill this session. We took a lot of the interim time of our meetings and discussed this particular bill, this action that we're asking the state of Wyoming to join. For your information, just some things, background information, the state of Wyoming has belonged to the Streamlined Sales Tax Initiative for some 15 years now. And I believe there are about 24 or 25 states that are members of that coalition, that effort to streamline our sales tax. And so these states have combined and over these 15 years have conformed their sales tax laws, different statutes to conform. And so when the federal government were to take action, Wyoming would certainly be ready to go at a moment's notice to convert over to those things. So we are a conforming state. We have spent nearly $500,000 in that effort over the last 15 years, and we send myself and my co-chair to those meetings, as well as our Department of Revenue head and some assistants. And so we've been actively participating in those meetings on an annual basis. Also, our revenue department head is next in line for chairing this organization, so we've been very actively involved. It's estimated that $45 million annually is lost in revenue from not being able to collect these sales tax from these purchases made online. During our interim discussions, we had discussed different fairness issues. We know about the fairness issue between retailers on Main Street and retailers over the online or internet. Also, this point was made, and I kind of took notice to this, but it's a fairness issue among taxpayers. As we go down the streets and sidewalks of our communities, you have different homes that purchase different ways. Some homes purchase from Main Street, some homes purchase online more than others. And so the fairness of who is participating more in paving those streets, paving those sidewalks, laying the infrastructure, it becomes an issue. One taxpayer is putting more money towards that infrastructure than the other, than maybe perhaps the neighbor. So it's not just a fairness issue of businesses in Wyoming and online retailers, but also an issue of fairness between taxpayers themselves. It's the right thing to do. This was one of our major bills as Revenue Committee. You'll hear and probably have received emails declaring that it's a new tax. It is not a new tax. It's sales tax that we have been able to not been able to recover because it's just difficult to enforce. The qualifiers, as my colleague mentioned, were the $100,000 threshold, as well as or 200 or more transactions. That's the threshold that the committee had laid out upon recommendation of the Department of Revenue. Anything smaller than that would probably cost more than it would be worth to go after. But the initial thing we have to keep in mind here is not a new tax and $45 million annually in lost revenue. That's what we're after. It's a fairness issue, and I'd ask your support on this important bill.
Any further discussion? Any question being called? All those in favor of Senator Wasper's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 19, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That motion carries. House Bill 19 is passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard those. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion carries.
Reading clerk, please read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 82 engrossed, do pass amended. House Bill 118, do pass amended. House Bill 21, do pass. House Bill 36, engrossed, do pass. House Bill 38, do pass. House Bill 291, do pass. House Bill 192, do pass amended. House Bill 22, do pass amended. House Bill 37, engrossed, do pass. House Joint Resolution 8, do pass. House Bill 19, engrossed, do pass amended. Senator Boner, Chairman.
Senator Boner.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. We have some more concurrences. Are the sponsors ready? Senator Peterson, are you ready on message number 298?
I am, Mr. President, if I can find them.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
Message number 298, referencing Senate File 9, Certification of Cases to State Board of Equalization.
Senator Peterson?
I'm working here. Yeah, thank you. I would move message number 298, concurrence on Senate File 9, Certification of Cases to State Board of Equalization, and ask for the body's favorable recommendation to concur. What the House did, Mr. President, is on page 2, line 6, after equalization, they've just inserted the providing compelling reasons to do so. Makes perfect sense. It's reasonable. It's a good amendment, and I'd ask for the body's concurrence on message 298.
For the discussion, the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 9, message number 298. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Christensen? Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File 9, message number 298. Message number 299. Senator Peterson, are you ready?
I am, Mr. President.
Would you clerk please read that message in?
Message number 299, referencing Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 299, concurrence, on Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization. The House did something with this one. They removed the word shall and inserted may on line 13 on page 3. And then cleaned it up a little bit after that with the deleting the balance of that line, then deleting also lines 14 and 15 on page 3, which addressed the 30 days after the date. And that was always some heartburn for, as the community members, trying to match those dates up and the petitioner. So in all, Mr. President, it's a good amendment, and I'd ask the body's concurrence on message 299.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we had some discussion on this bill about the may versus shall, and in visiting with some of our colleagues here in this building, I believe that the drafting preference is the word shall. And if you look at that subsection, it says any person whose property assessment has been increased by an equalization order shall be notified. I think if that order is going out, that should be a requirement. So I'm not terribly comfortable with that change.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, if the sponsor can, or the chairman of the committee can explain to me, the language that's being deleted, any person wishing to review an assessment of his property shall contact the county assessor not later than 30 days after the date of the assessment schedule. I ran out of breath. Is that current statutory language, and is it being expunged or repealed from language, or is that new language that's being deleted? And if so, does that mean anybody whose assessment, are they losing the opportunity to review their assessment with the county assessor?
Anybody else wish to have any question before Senator Peterson speaks? Any other questions? Senator Peterson, go ahead.
Mr. President, answer the first question. It wasn't line 11, it was line 13, and then there's two shalls in that paragraph, and one is for the shall be notified by the Board of Equalization or Equalization Order. But on line 13, it's talking about the person, the petitioner, wishing to review an assessment of his property shall, that's been changed to may contact the county assessor not later than 30 days. And that the rest of that was deleted. So if the petitioner wants to do that, they may. And if not, they don't have to. So it's the county will still, or the Board of Equalization, shall be notified by the increase by the county assessor. So that notification, that's a shall. That remains.
Senator Burns, he's spoken for a second time. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 10, message number 299, and you've been asked to vote aye. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns? Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
No.
Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Pappas, no. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Bonflatern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 21 aye, 8 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File 10, being message number 299. Message number 300. Senator Peterson, are you ready? Will the reading clerk please read in that message?
Message number 300, referencing Senate File 11, License Revocation Process.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 300, concurrence, on Senate File 11, License Revocation Process. This was a little more involved, these amendments that were tacked on to by our colleagues down the hall. And as I plugged this into the bill, it really didn't change much. I thought it better clarified. I thought they were good amendments. The way this has been going, this group might disagree with that. But I would ask for concurrence. I think the bill is still intact and makes sense, and so I'd ask for concurrence.
Further discussion. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 11, message number 3. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, what kind of license are we talking about here? It's sometimes helpful when we're asked to concur in these bills to have a little notion as to what the bill really is about.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. These are liquor license revocations, and that's what the topic of the bill is about.
Anyone else wish to comment before the bringer of the motion speaks for a second time? You ready for the question? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 11, being message number 300. If you vote aye, you vote to concur. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar excused. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Downton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Conflict.
Case conflict. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Meyer, no. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 26 aye, 2 no, 1 excused, and 1 conflict.
By your vote, you have concurred with the House amendments to Senate File 11, message number 300. Messages from the House.
Message number 304. From the House of Representatives, February 13. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the following bill by the vote indicated. Senate File 34, Student Personal Digital Information Protection Act, ayes 30, noes 30. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Standing Committee reports.
February 13, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 9, to whom was referred House Bill 183, engrossed, Security for On-Deposit Public Funds, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Fladern. Senator Anderson, Acting Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, also known as Bolo Tie Tuesday.
Announcements. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Committee Number 8, Transportation, will meet in about, let's say, a quarter till 5 in Jonah Room S-27 to consider the following bills. House Bill 275 engrossed, Driver License Revisions, House Bill 280, Vehicle Registration Requirements.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number three, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, 30 minutes after noon recess, in the larger room, Jonah Room L54, to take up House Joint Resolution 2, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, House Bill 50, Limitations on Delegates, Constitution Amendment Conventions, and H.J. House Joint Resolution 3, Single Subject Amendment Resolution.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number six, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., in Jonah Room S-27 to consider House Bill 28 engrossed, Game and Fish Fees, House Bill 270 engrossed, Wolf Management Trophy Game Animal, and if time permits, House Bill 173 engrossed, Paramutual Event Distribution of Fees.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, just upon the noon break today, I announced among the referred bills that we were going to hear this afternoon upon adjournment, I announced HB 58. In fact, that is a directly referred bill, so we won't hear that till Wednesday. So we will be hearing, quarter to five sounds good, House Bill 23 and House Bill 86.
Any other announcements? Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. Just the chairman just announced House Bill 58. I believe that we're going to take that up, Mr. Chairman and Mr. President, tomorrow at noon. At least that's what we were informed, so we may want to check on that, and maybe the chairman can get back to you tomorrow. I believe it's Tuesday.
Mr. President, I'm sorry.
Senator Burns.
This notice is mistaken. It's Wednesday.
I'm confused now. Is it Tuesday or Wednesday? Senator Burns.
Mr. President, it will be Wednesday.
Okay. Any other announcements? You heard the Senator Hastert. Oh, here we go. Tonight.
Final reminder, Committee 99 will meet at 1901 at 8 o'clock tonight. All members of the Senate and all staff are welcome to join us. And we have, I think, a pretty good lineup coming up tonight. And I think some of this might be contingent on our folks down on the other end of the building, of whether they're even going to get out tonight or whether they're sleeping in. But 1901... tonight at 8 o'clock.
Senator Hastert, what are the rules, joint rules, in a competition like this that they don't show? Do they default, or do they take that under advisement?
Absolutely, we'll default. Well, I think what we could do is have some of the non-singing members like myself pretend to be House members, and then they'll just win.
We'll win for sure, Senator Hastert. Anything else? Having heard the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. The House is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 14th, Tuesday, Valentine's. What? Oh, again, I did it. The Senate is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Valentine's Day, February 14th. Senator Hastert, you got me off.